We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything between the Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, assimilating.
Oh, wow. And now for this week's very special conundrum, Star Trek First Contact and the evolution of the Borg.
Well, obviously, November 22nd, it's a day that'll live in history, Cam.
Obviously.
1996, I remember, I was in grade 7. Mm. My sister and I, we race out to the theater, and it's all sold out for the premiere of Star Trek First Contact. We could not get in until Sunday afternoon.
So what did you go to instead?
We went home. We went to the video store. You wouldn't believe how bummed I was.
What, do you remember what you rented? Was it like Generations, where you're like, well, at least it's a Star Trek movie?
What did we rent? I don't know. It would have been, like, what was out around that time?
Peanut Butter Solution?
You know what? I don't think Independence Day would have been out on video yet, would it?
Probably not in those days, no. It was a bigger gulf between video and theater.
I probably went for something sci-fi.
Multiplicity?
Yes. It may have been Multiplicity, because I do remember going to that video store and renting it, starring Michael Keaton.
Yep.
That was one crappy movie.
Yep. Anyway. Harold Ramis, God bless you.
The Borg.
Yes.
Yes, so obviously it's a 20-year anniversary.
They also multiply.
Yes, that's true. It's a 20-year anniversary of Star Trek First Contact, and I would almost venture to call that peak Borg. It's when I think the Borg were at the height of their popularity.
Yeah.
You can make the argument for best of both worlds, but this is where it really was clear that it was crossing over to the mainstream, and you had audiences flocking. I mean, I just think about those sold-out shows throughout my suburban Seattle community that I couldn't get into, you know.
Right.
So it was really crazy. That was my like first Star Trek First Contact experience, and I went to that movie multiple times. Cam, what was your first contact experience?
I mean, I just remember when it came out, everyone in my high school was talking about it. Like, I mean, maybe it helped that I was hanging out in the computer room at that point.
I went to a high school filled with people named, like, Chet.
Oh, okay.
And Bradwick.
Mandrake.
Yes. So it's definitely no one in my high school was talking about it.
Right, okay. Well, in mine, I mean, we used to hang out sometimes in the computer room. We weren't techie guys, me and my friends, but we would hang out in the computer room because people had...
Born?
No... Well, that, yeah. No, not 1996. What are you kidding me?
Okay.
No, we, one of the guys had hooked up Duke Nukem on all the computers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we would play group Duke Nukem.
Yeah.
So anyways, I remember going to hang out there, and people were really excited about First Contact. Like, it was all anyone was talking about, which was not the case for any of the other TNG movies.
No.
You know, when I went to school, like, no one was talking about Generations.
Insurrection?
No.
Yeah.
No.
It wasn't a big draw. I think, was it just that the Borg had already kind of had that... People were conscious of it in the mainstream, and then you're getting it on the big screen. It was a big deal.
I think it was maybe also the fact that Next Generation at that point had been off the air for a few years.
Yeah.
Whereas Generations comes out right after after Next Generation ends.
Yeah.
So you don't have that kind of grieving period. Whereas at this point, it had been 2 years. People who were big fans of TNG hadn't seen the crew now in a couple years. Now they're coming back with the Borg. Like, it's kind of a perfect storm.
I just remember what a big deal it was that the Borg were going to be on the big screen.
Yeah. Oh, I remember seeing trailers and stuff and thinking it just looked very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, the movie made $92 million, which seems like kind of modest when you look at it from modern viewpoint, but compared to other Star Trek movies at the time, it was actually very good.
And I think nowadays that would probably be a solid $130, $140 million take.
So about the domestic of Star Trek Beyond?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But I don't you think that Star Trek First Contact was such a bigger deal at the time than Star Trek Beyond was this past summer?
Yes.
This was a weird summer. We've talked about it on the show before, where, like, not a lot of movies did well. There's a couple that did extremely well, and then a lot of movies just really underperformed.
And, you know, where, like, one of the biggest movies is, like, Secret Life of Pets, and how many people did you hear in your life mention that?
Yeah. Should we debate box office
No, please, God, no. More? That doesn't go well, ever.
But, yeah, so, look, if you want our even more in-depth thoughts about Star Trek First Contact, you can download our Star Trek First Contact episode. That was number 8 bonus, is that
correct? I think so. Correct? Go to subspacepod.com, our blog. Again, subspacepod.com. And look for the blog entry for this particular episode you're listening to now, and I'll have a link in there for our First Contact review. As I'll also throw in the Best of Both Worlds review, too.
Yeah, a good call. So I think what we want to do for this episode, though, is... if it's the 20th anniversary of Star Trek First Contact, maybe we can examine how we got to First Contact and where the Borg went from there. And just talk about the overall evolution of, do you think the Borg is the most iconic species in Star Trek at this point? Or would you give it to, say, maybe the Klingons?
I think I would go Klingons.
Okay.
Yeah.
But close seconds?
Ooh, that's an excellent... Maybe the Vulcans?
Okay. Yeah, just for Spock and everything?
Yeah. I don't know if you just put up random Vulcans if the average person's like, well, there was a group of Vulcans.
But would you market a film that says, the Vulcans, they're on the big screen now, baby?
I would. It's why I'm not a Hollywood exec.
Okay, that's true.
And I also wonder, like, how many people just, the average person would also immediately recognize, like, an Orion slave girl or, you know, an Orion species.
I would still think the Borg more recognizable than that, you know, but I just think... the Borg are a very big deal. I think a lot of people just, they recognize the pale faces, the laser eyes, the implants, and who doesn't hear at least once a week, resistance is futile?
Right.
Well, I guess a lot of people, but not in this household, Cam.
What's interesting about the Borg is they come out in a period of sort of pop culture, right at the tail end of the 80s, going to the early 90s, where there's more of a focus on sort of dark, gritty, and kind of overly complicated design. You look at, like, the comic book industry, you get to that period, you're getting Venom, you're getting Bane, you're in these, you know, these villains who are kind of these really over-designed, really, they make all the other villains before them look really insignificant by comparison.
Yeah.
But they're really amped up and dangerous looking. And the Borg kind of fall into that, but to me the Borg are a perfect example of how you do it well. There was, I think, you know, Maurice Hurley, who was running Star Trek Season 2 of Next
Showrunner.
Generation.
You should listen to our Showrunners episode to find out more about one Maurice Hurley.
Right. You know, he came up with them for the episode Q-Who. And it's just, they seem so perfect right out of the gate. They weren't, as, you know, you look at the original series Klingons, like how long it took to get to the iconic Klingons we know. The Borg, I mean, Maurice Hurley, we can debate his impact on Star Trek Next Generation as a whole. But man, did he have a great idea there.
And just the fact that they seem so ominous, all-powerful, like they're introduced by slicing right into the hull of the Enterprise and sucking it out.
Right.
And it was clear that he was onto something, because when Michael Piller takes over as showrunner the next season, he's actually hinting at the Borg throughout that season. Like, you'll hear, like, I remember one of the most boring episodes of Next Generation is... do you remember the one where, like, they find these two elderly people on a planet that just want to be left alone?
Yes.
I think the Enterprise, they get, like, a fake message that indicates that, you know, the Borg are on their way, you better get out of here.
And right.
Everybody freaked out. So you could tell that Michael Piller thought it was quite fascinating.
In terms of old person shut-in episodes, which do you prefer, that one or the DS9 one with the farmer who won't leave his house?
Yeah, on Bajor?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think maybe the TNG one.
I think I'll go DS9.
That Bajor one is really bad. And I didn't care.
Where he's building a fireplace the whole time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Cam's right now in the midst of going through early Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
There's some stinkers in there.
But some greats.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting back to Q-Who, I mean, just the fact that this episode lands in Season 2, which is not a good season.
No.
And it's, I think, holds up really well. Like, I rewatched the episode for this podcast today. I was actually really surprised just how perfect all the Borg elements are in that episode. You know, when they go aboard that cube, it's among the best, you know, Starfleet on a Borg cube sequences, I think, in the history of the Borg.
Well, it's a it's a 1980s sci-fi TV budget.
Yes.
And it works.
Yes.
You know, I've seen that episode in recent years, and sure, it's aged compared to what you get on, say, Voyager, you know, just production-wise. But I think just how effective it was, just from a filmmaking standpoint, like, that is a scary place to be.
Yeah. I was curious, rewatching it, I had this thought. Do you think Q-Who, which this is the episode where Q comes aboard and wants to be a member of the crew, and then throws a tantrum and tosses the crew into, is it the Delta Quadrant?
It is, yeah.
They don't refer to it as such, so I don't think in the episode. Do they?
I thought they did.
Okay.
But you know what? They may not have established the quadrants until that episode featuring the Barzan wormhole where the Ferengis were bidding on it. So I could be mistaken.
Okay.
But anyway, go on.
But yeah, that's where they encounter the Borg and what have you, and then are kind of given the warning. The Borg are on their way to the Alpha Quadrant in the coming years. But rewatching this episode, I began to think, is Q Who a good episode? Or is it just a really great setup for the Borg?
I think that's a really good question, and I would say that I've watched in recent years, and I was actually kind of underwhelmed by it in the storytelling.
Yeah.
I thought Q came off, like, really, like, dinky.
Yes.
You know, like, petty.
Yeah, I've always said I prefer Q when he has a little bit of menace to him.
Yes.
That are, like, there's some episodes where he is goofier that are really fun, but it's like, you can't kind of go halfway, and this one is him being goofy, but then there's nothing goofy about the Borg.
No, so it's not great storytelling for that episode, but I think the setup for the Borg, and just the depiction of them, and I keep going back to that. I mean, this is like 80s sci-fi, and it really is effective there.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I think it's a really, solid, it's one of, I think, the best Borg episodes, period.
So maybe we jump forward to, do you think Best of Both Worlds Part 1 is the most iconic Borg episode, period?
Most iconic, yes. Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
We've talked about it in depth before. We can go into there from our previous podcast episode in which we review Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and 2. But from a standpoint of the Borg, the evolution of the Borg, are they scarier here, or are they as scary as they were when they were first introduced?
I don't think they're as scary in Best of Both Worlds as they are in Q-Who. I think because, and I think this is something we're going to talk about throughout this episode, when you introduce the boogeyman, the more times you see the boogeyman, the less scary he gets. You know, this is the thing that plagued, Leatherface, Michael Myers, Jason, Freddy, and all of those horror franchises. At a certain point, like, they start scary. And so, Best of Both Worlds, I think they still have that scary edge, especially when they're taking Picard. I think that was a masterstroke on the storytellers to have Picard get taken and really violated.
Yeah.
That's something that I don't think audiences were prepared for, especially when you look at those first two seasons where the crew pretty much make it out, with the exception of Tasha Yar, really.
Yeah.
You know, pretty intact every time.
Well, I want to say, I think you're making a good argument as to why I find them more frightening in, say, Best of Both Worlds than Q-Who. I think the other thing, keep in mind, I mean, I had watched Best of Both Worlds before I'd ever seen Q-Who.
Right.
And so when I go back and watch what was going on in Q-Who, it wasn't, that frightening stuff where, like, them violating Picard.
Yes.
It didn't end with Picard literally assimilated and Riker telling them to, fire on the Borg ship, Even think about, like, they arrive at that colony and it's just turned into a giant crater and they're moving closer and closer to Earth. So there's something still very frightening about them at that point.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Best of Both Worlds is more of an action-based story than a horror. Like, the horror, to me, is more in Q-Who.
Okay,
But when we see them in here, there's enough there that I think, I mean, there's a reason Best of Both Worlds is iconic and so loved by fans. It's because I think as a story, it's the best of the Borg, probably, for TNG, debatably. I think my favorite is the one we're going to get to next.
Okay.
But I think for most fans, they would rank this as probably the best Borg story.
Yeah, I would agree with that, like most fans. But you and I aren't like most fans,
Ken. No, we're not.
Why don't we jump to iBorg?
Because, which is my favorite.
And, I'll say it, this is my favorite Borg episode as well, because I think it's doing the Borg justice in everything that they built up to be, but it's also like a real pitch-perfect Star Trek episode. It's giving people... I love it when Star Trek doesn't give you one good option, one bad option. Mm-hmm. They just give you multiple bad options that the crew has to decide from it, and they get that conflict, that internal conflict within.
Right.
And I think it was genius on the part of the writers here.
Yeah, this is great writing for the character of Picard. Having him battle himself over the his you know torment over being Locutus, while dealing with Hugh, who personifies his the thing he hates the most. And Hugh is so lovable to a certain degree.
Yeah, he is.
Like, I love when Hugh's on the ship, he's just like, I will simulate you. And you're like, oh, how cute.
That was a good moment.
But Picard is just like, I want to kill this thing.
Yeah. And, do you blame him?
And, you know, I think they do a really fantastic job making Hugh endearing and letting us sort of experience him through the eyes of Geordi.
Well, I was going to bring up the fact that the Geordi-Hugh relationship.
Yeah.
Geordi has an affinity for not quite human... kind of entities, you know, when we think about his relationship with Data,
yes,
his relationship with holographic Leia Brahms, you know, and look, I mean, this relationship here with Hugh, which Hugh clearly recalls fondly when we get to Descent Part 2, and he's inquiring about Geordi as well. I think when you don't have to make a Borg episode an event,
right?
And I think instead, they just made one really good Star Trek episode. And I do wonder what the debates were going on in the writer's room at the time, because I think it was very clear that Michael Piller did not want to overuse the Borg, because that would take away a lot of their menace.
Right.
So the Borg, they only came up a total of 6 times, or featured in 6 episodes of Next Generation at that point. And I think used very good effect here in iBorg.
Yeah, I think so too. And ultimately, this episode is really about Picard grappling with his own morality. So I think, you know, we've talked about Best of Both Worlds, how it kind of falls apart in the second half and becomes very plot-driven.
Yeah.
I think the reason that iBorg is my favorite is because it's tied to a very strong philosophical question. What do you do if you can wipe out a race that's basically irredeemable?
Yeah.
Like, there's no cure for the Borg. They're not someone like the Klingons who, you know, are going to come around and make peace with the Federation. I don't think the Borg will ever make peace, really.
No, and, you know, that's addressed again. Why don't we jump over to Descent Part 1, where that very question is addressed once again when Admiral Incheyev is confronting Picard about the fact that you had the opportunity to destroy a species that was intent on destroying our way of life, and why didn't you do that? And Cam, do you think Picard's decision... What do you think of Picard's decision in iBorg? It's meant to spark debate.
Yeah, I feel like they really push the viewers away from Picard's point of view by having Hugh there.
Yeah.
Like, what if Hugh was an asshole? Like, what if he was a real jerk?
Yeah, he's just, like, flipping people the bird the whole time. Yeah.
You know, what if he was, like, Lore?
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, you know what? Get rid of the Borg. They are, you know, they suck. He was so lovable that it's hard to really cheer for Picard to wipe out his entire race. So they kind of stacked the deck there. But, you know, yeah, Incheyev, I think, has an excellent point. And it's something that I think we're kind of going to get back to when we talk about Endgame and Voyager.
Yeah. How many people are going to have to die so that Picard feels like he made the moral decision?
Yeah. And it's sort of the whole Joker conundrum with Batman, whereas if Batman killed the Joker, a lot of people wouldn't be killed.
Yes.
But Batman can't kill the Joker.
Well, we go to even more depth in Descent, Parts 1 and 2, in our episode dedicated to that one. But just from an evolutionary standpoint, do you find that the Borg are starting to get a little neutered?
Yes. This is, to me, where maybe, you know, I'm going to come back to this point with some of the other major developments in the Borg.
Yeah.
These are kind of the points where maybe they worked at the time, but they were also chipping away at what made the Borg effective in the first place.
Yeah.
I think the introduction of Hugh is brilliant for storytelling. I think it also begins to weaken the Borg as sort of this all-consuming, kind of faceless enemy.
Because essentially the episode is dealing with the fact that what if all these Borg drones are becoming more individualized?
Yes.
And so, yes, it wipes away what made them scary in the first place.
Exactly. And so, in only a short handful of episodes, we're already diminishing the power of the Borg. And when we get to Descent, I really do enjoy Descent as a two-parter. I don't know that I enjoy it as a Borg two-parter. I think I enjoy it more for lore.
Yeah.
The Lore Data relationship.
But I think you and I, what we like most about that episode is, like, some of the beelines going on with the Crusher in command of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
We could not figure out for the life of us why there are 700 people searching for Data on one planet.
Yes.
Like, that kind of baffled us.
Yeah. And to me, the Borg are not scary in this two-parter really at all. They're sort of glorified guards.
Yeah. Who fall for the whole, he's having a heart attack, please open up the jail cell and let him out.
Yeah.
That trick.
I think there was a really kernel of a great idea that's paid off well, but not great.
Yeah.
Which is the idea of attaching the Borg to Q, or to Lore.
Yeah.
I think that's a really great idea. I don't know that it pays off as gangbusters as it should, but I think it's solid.
I do appreciate Data's decision at the end where he's like, my brother, I guess, is irredeemable.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to just turn the off switch on him.
Right.
So.
Now, that episode also introduces sort of the Rebellion Borg.
Yeah.
Headed by Hugh. And I think this is where the problems really start.
Yeah. but we can take a little pause and think about, before we get into that with Voyager, we can think about the evolution of the Borg in Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah.
Because just not only from a storytelling perspective, but from just their look of the Borg. What do you think is cooler looking? The original Borg 1.0 look that we got in Next Generation, or this updated big screen version of the Borg?
I mean, the ones in First Contact are definitely have more money behind them.
Yeah.
And are more over-designed. I kind of like the original Q-Who ones.
Okay.
To me, either one looks great.
Yeah.
But I kind of lean more towards the original depictions of the Borg.
What? Maybe we can get into this at the end of the episode, but if we ever see a return of the Borg in Star Trek, and it takes place in an earlier timeline, I'd like to see them depicted in an even more rudimentary way, just to show that they are assimilating species, and as such, their look changes as well.
Yeah, like I like in Q-Who, the time the first Borg shows up on the ship. It's not like, boy, that's scary looking. It's more like complete befuddlement.
Yeah.
Like they don't know what to even make of it.
Yeah.
Whereas First Contact, one of those ones pops over, they're like, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it.
Yeah.
Like they look evil right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah.
Like they look like movie villains.
Well, let's talk about that. Yes, they look like movie villains. It's essentially the closest thing Star Trek ever comes to a zombie movie, you know?
Right.
And we get, and the thing is, there's a certain familiarity here. Mm-hmm. We have Picard telling everybody to rotate the frequencies on their phasers.
Yeah.
Then Picard's, like, just kicking ass nonstop. It's Patrick Stewart, you know. Like,
on the holodeck.
Yeah.
As Dixon Hill.
Turning the safeties off once again. I think we're maybe burying the lead a little bit when we're talking about the evolution of the Borg, and we're introduced to the idea of the Borg Queen.
Right, which I know that they had kind of fought about internally in terms of the Next Generation show, that idea, and they never went for it on the show. In the movies, I think it works fantastically well.
Yeah.
I think Alice Krieger and her relationship with Data in that film are fantastic. They're my favorite part of the movie. But I think the Borg Queen opens a can of worms from which the Borg never recover.
Mm-hmm.
It works for that movie, though.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Borg Queen in Star Trek First Contact. I've always, maybe I've interpreted it in a different way than other people have. A lot of people interpret it, maybe this is the intention of the writers, as the Borg Queen is the one dictating the will of the collective consciousness.
Right.
And I've always preferred to interpret it more as an embodiment of the collective consciousness, the one giving them voice, as opposed to all of a sudden there's one unified leader who's, it goes by the whim of the Borgs, which I think is kind of antithetical to what we know and understand about the species. It's literally making them bumblebees.
Exactly, and that's really what happens going forward.
Yes.
And I think that's where they really lose the threat of the Borg. The idea of a faceless enemy that, regardless of whether the Borg Queen is sort of a manifestation of all of their collective thoughts, or a single ruler, having one specific target in the mass, I think removes a lot of the threat.
Yeah.
Because the Borg Queen, ultimately, when she's toppled, they're defeated.
Yeah. Which, don't you love that sci-fi movie cliche?
Yeah.
You know, you kill the queen and everything else, or the mothership, or cut off the head of the snake and everything else just falls apart. And
yeah.
It's like, we see that the Avengers or Independence Day, for Star Trek First Contact, just films, tons and tons of films.
Yeah. And so I think that's, I mean, the problem begins with Hugh in I-Borg, and continues in the Borg Queen, the idea of having these individual figures within the Borg.
Yes.
Because to me, there's nothing scarier early on with the Borg that the fact that there's nothing to talk to, like you can't even communicate with these with this race. They're just completely unstoppable, and they don't care what you think or feel.
And I should have mentioned this one episode, maybe going backwards just a little bit here, pre-First Contact. They do make an appearance in Deep Space Nine.
Right.
But it is a flashback back to Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, with Emissary.
And it's actually the first time that we actually see like a widespread Borg battle. How do you feel that contributed to, I guess, the lore of the Borg?
The lore?
The lore, yeah. You heard me.
In what regard?
Does it make them more frightening seeing the kind of destruction that they can do? Or did it take away, like...
I don't think, and this goes for First Contact as well, I don't think Borg space battles have anywhere near the impact as the opening of Best of Both Worlds with the big crater in the planet. Yeah. Once I'm seeing ships flying around and shooting rays and whatever...
It looks like any other alien could be attacking.
And the Borg also seem far less powerful than when we first see them in Q-Who, and that cube is chasing down the Enterprise, and you feel like there's nothing these guys can do.
Yeah.
Like, this thing's going to get them.
So, we've addressed this in the podcast episode dedicated to First Contact, but what was the Borg's plan exactly in this film? Send one cube, get destroyed, send a sphere back in time? But what I'm getting at here, when we're talking about the evolution of the Borg, is they seem to be evolving into a dumb salamander, much like Tom and Captain Janeway did in Threshold.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't know if they're there with in the brains department, but look, they're a species of
drones. I don't really understand their plan very well in First Contact. It doesn't feel like it's something that the Borg intelligence would come up with.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how it helps them.
And so the idea is they go back in time, assimilate a very primitive Earth that doesn't really have much technology to offer them?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, remember, the original script was going to be the Renaissance period.
Yes. Star Trek, men in tights.
This picture like sword fights with the Borg.
That would have been awesome. How could they adapt the frequency to steel?
They're waving their cybernetic arms and they're hacking them off. It's like the Black Knight in
Monty Python. Python. Yeah. It's just a scratch.
Tis but a scratch.
All right. Well, okay, let's jump into their so-called evolution, Voyager, because I recall at the time the big debate when we heard that they were going to make an appearance, not, mind you, in Scorpion Part 1, but in the episode Unity.
Which I believe actually aired before First Contact came out.
I'm not sure about that, because the debate that I recall people were having is whether or not their depiction would look as they do on the big screen, or if they'd be continuing on with the look from Next Generation.
Okay, okay.
So I'm pretty sure it aired, like, soon after First Contact did.
Right. And we'll be a little more specific with sort of the plots of some of these Voyager ones, because there's a lot of them. And I don't know how... I think everyone probably who's listening remembers the plots of all of the TNG Borg episodes.
Yeah.
Voyager, maybe not so much. And this one, of course, Unity, is where Chakotay...
You've lost me already. Sorry.
...uncovers sort of this group of... what are they? Unassimilated Borg?
Yeah.
That have, like, a mental link.
Yeah.
And they're sort of growing, like, aren't they, like, farmers or something?
I just remember it was mostly, like, he came across a real, like, a dead vessel or something.
Are you talking about Chakotay?
Yeah. It's called his charisma. Yeah, honestly, when you're talking about the evolution of Borg, the only thing that was of interest to me, and I just double-checked, so this was episode number 17 of season 3.
Yeah.
So that means it would have aired around February, whereas First Contact would have come out in about November.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this episode is incredibly forgettable. I remember at the time watching it thinking, oh, cool, the Borg are back. And immediately forgetting about that episode. Cam, is there anything that stands out to you?
I don't think this adds to the mythology in any interesting way of the Borg. I don't think it's an interesting Borg story. And, you know, I mean, Robert Beltran, who I love at cons.
He's one of the best convention panelists around.
You know, I will never miss a Robert Beltran panel.
No.
But boy, is Chakotay boring.
He's one of the most thankless characters that we've got, unfortunately.
Yeah, and so whenever they give him an episode, for the most part, they're really lousy. And this one is pretty bad. Like, I have a hard time believing viewers checking into this episode, you know, who'd watch the TNG Borg episodes, found this exciting.
No.
I'm sure it was like, well, okay.
Yeah. It's just such a bummer, because it was coming off the high of Star Trek First Contact.
Right.
And then, but, you know, they do follow this up with one episode that I did find far more exciting, which was Scorpion Part 1.
I'm a big fan of Scorpion.
The idea that, just that teaser, if you recall the Borger saying, like, resistance is futile, blah, 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 and then you just see these lightning bolts destroying, like, what, 3 Borg cubes?
Yes.
You're like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
What can take on the Borg like that?
Right.
You know, I think the idea of Species 8472, although the evolution here is that the Borg are getting weaker and weaker, but the idea that the Borg get in over their heads.
Right.
And I think that's fascinating.
And that the crew essentially has to make a pact with the devil.
Yes.
I think is fascinating. Like, how does one make a pact with the Borg? That's interesting to me.
And for once, Chakotay actually contributes something very good to the story.
Yeah, here. And I can't wait until we get into reviewing two-parter Voyager episodes, because to me, Chakotay is, I think, only ever good in two-parters.
Yeah.
Like, they give him a lot to do in Scorpion, and also in Equinox.
Right, yeah.
Like, Chakotay and Janeway have, like, real fireworks between them. And, you know, watching the Chakotay-Janeway relationship really makes me realize why Enterprise and DS9 were brilliant in having their captain and first officer have dueling sort of philosophies. Because, boy, Chakotay and Janeway, even though they were designed to have dueling philosophies, do not. And all he does is just kind of go like, yes, captain.
No, all he really does is just read off like what's on his monitor next to his chair. I feel bad for Robert Beltran, because he's like clearly like he's got this charisma. You can tell how he got the role.
Yes.
They just gave him nothing to do.
You know, he's in the same boat as Garrett Wong.
I know. So. Oh, I know, yeah. For those who've never been to a convention, if Garrett Wong is there, if Robert Beltran is there, you need to check out their panels.
Yeah.
There are some other actors there that you can skip.
Yes.
I'll be honest, though. But in this case, I think the evolution of Borg in Scorpion is quite brilliant. I think it may fall into that whole trap of maybe Part 2 not quite living up to Part 1, but we are introduced to 7 of 9, which I think is one of the biggest steps in the evolution of the Borg,
yes.
Or at least the way that they are depicted here.
Now, I'm curious, how do you feel about the introduction of 7 of 9 in this episode? To me, 7 of 9 is a great character. Like, I think when we do an episode on 7 of 9 episodes, we're going to find there's some damn fantastic Star Trek episodes.
Yes.
However, to me, 7 of 9 also represents one of the problems that I've noted kind of with the Borg, Queen, and also Hugh. 7 of 9 doesn't feel like just a generic Borg when she shows up in this show.
No, she doesn't.
Like there's now a hierarchy of Borg.
She's essentially their, I suppose, emissary.
Yes.
You know, and it seems as if like there's something a little special about her. She's not just like that random drone who beamed aboard the Enterprise's engineering, you know, in that first episode, Q Who.
Right.
It's just like, you know, there's something different about her. And I think you bring up the hierarchy thing, which is important because we've clearly seen that come into fruition more and more as we progress with some of these two-parters on Star Trek Voyager, as we see the return of the Borg Queen as well, who's taken a special interest in 7 of 9.
Yeah, and I think this really becomes a problem.
Yeah.
I think this becomes a huge problem with the Borg, and why at this point, say the, you know, Star Trek 4, the Chris Hemsworth joint that's coming out.
Star Trek in Time.
Yeah. If you tell me that that's a Borg story, like, at this point, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing interesting about it to me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, I mean, Voyager, while I can appreciate that they wanted to just explore the Borg more, they wanted to kind of make the Borg the Klingons, you know, or what have you. Like, they wanted to develop that culture as much as they could. I think developing the Borg is a bad idea.
Well,
and I think that that just continues throughout the series.
Maybe let's talk briefly about why they did that, because I think one of the big pitches that the writers were giving is like, look, we're in the Delta Quadrant. We're going to have new species every single week.
Yeah.
And then you get rid of the Kazons after a while.
The Kazon, good lord.
I know. You move past that space, you move past Vidian space, and then it's like, do we have to make Michael Westmore create like new foreheads every single week.
Yeah.
So we do see them exploring, like, getting like some more continuity with just who you're encountering. It makes sense that you keep encountering the Borg just because of their transwarp abilities.
Yeah. And I mean, I do like the idea that Voyager has to go through Borg space.
Yeah.
That's really cool because, you know, we've seen what one cube can do to the Enterprise in Q-Who. How is it to go through Borg space? Not that bad.
No, yeah.
It's actually not that big of a headache, well, really.
Tell that to Harry Kim.
And, you know, the Scorpion makes sort of an issue with Species 8472, which I really actually enjoy their usage in that episode. And I really love the episode Prey with Species 8472.
Yeah.
But for the most part, 8472, they really drop the ball big time on.
You don't love the episode where they all pretend that they're going to Starfleet Academy, Cam?
Not a fan. Not a fan. I believe it was Stefan Estanila, our guest, on the Halloween episode, mentioned that one. He was a fan. That's an interesting one to talk about. I'd like to do a debate on that further down the road in some way.
We'll examine Species 8472 at a certain point in time.
Yeah. But I just find 8472 are introduced with so much fanfare. And I really think they're effective.
Yeah.
I think they're scary. But they also, in a sense, are put in the same sort of problem box as the Borg are in Q-Who, where they seem unstoppable. By the end of Scorpion, you're like, well, obviously you can never stop these things.
But then they do have to get neutered as well at a certain point.
Exactly. And they just get it done a lot quicker than the Borg do.
What do you think of fluidic space? I'm intrigued by this.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Should we have a Star Trek series set in fluidic space?
I'd love it. to boldly flow.
Where no man has flowed before.
Amazing pitch right there. Okay. Well, moving on. Look, we'll go into even more depth in the next few months with regards to Scorpion Parts 1 and 2.
Right.
The next time they are featured quite prominently is with the Raven, in which we find out that Seven of Nine's real father is an idiot.
I was going to say exactly that.
Yes.
I mean, I like the idea that they're sort of these anthropologists who are studying the Borg.
Studying the rumors of this horrible sounding species that could, like, wipe them out.
You know, though, that if the Borg were real and on Earth, let's say they're in, I don't know, some jungle somewhere.
Yeah.
There's going to be some idiot that's going to go wandering there looking for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to happen.
I'm picturing, you know, the film The Descent?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know,
the cave one? With
yeah.
The cave people? Yeah.
With Neil Marshall, director.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there's some anthropologists out there like, let me go investigate these cave-dwelling things that, like, will just tear you into pieces.
Yes. What I like about Raven is the idea that, you know, we don't get a lot of that. It's something that, you know, we get the idea of, like, Starfleet investigating things all the time. I kind of like that with this, it's just a couple that are like, we're anthropologists, we want to study these things.
Yeah, I like the idea. I like when they do explore civilian life in the Star Trek universe.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we get people... Well, it often seems as if you're a civilian, you're an idiot. You're a Richard Bashir or you're a Magnus Hansen.
Yeah.
So, but in this case, look, I think this is a very intriguing Borg episode to me, you know? Like, it kind of reaffirms everything we already knew. But in the evolution of the Borg,
I don't know that it really does a lot for the Borg themselves so much as just explain the origins of Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
And I think her origin story is interesting. I was actually surprised how quickly they kind of give it all away.
Yeah.
You know,
it was pretty early on after her introduction.
It's like, what, 3 or 4 or 5 episodes or something in?
Yeah, it would have been episode 6 of season 4.
Yeah, so that's very quick.
So maybe, Kim, you haven't really explored Lost, but
right. In
there, the whole conceit of the series is like every episode is essentially like a flashback episode on one particular character, and they illuminate different aspects of that character's life. And so maybe they just didn't want people on pins and needles. Maybe they figured, like, let's get this out of the way. Let's just explain her origin story, much like they would do in, like, comic books.
Right, and I kind of appreciate it, you know, watching, like, say, like the Netflix Marvel shows, where they will stretch a character's origin over 13 episodes and often kind of drag it out way too far. It's hard for me not to appreciate that they were just like, let's just do it in one episode.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about this? Because you and I, we just saw Doctor Strange over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, or was it 2 weekends ago?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so. 2 weekends ago. How do you think, you know, we've seen the Marvel origin story many a time. How do you think this was compared with others?
I think there's a template to Marvel's origin stories, and that goes right back to the comic books. Like, the comic book origin stories are very similar if you compare them. I think this one is at least has enough color and energy to it that it stood out more than some of the others.
This is essentially, like, the only real Star Trek main character origin story that we ever get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this one works.
Yeah.
I think it's a good episode. I don't think it's, you know, it ain't I-Borg, but it's a solid episode.
Well, it ain't I-Borg, but what about the I-Borg of Voyager? I think the closest we get to that is the episode Drone, which we skip ahead of season to season 5.
Oh, this is very much their attempt to do I-Borg.
Yeah.
This is shameless.
Well, this is where essentially... yes, okay. Seven's Borg nanoprobes come in contact with the Doctor's 29th century mobile emitter.
Sure.
And they create... the sentient Borg drone.
That'll happen.
It'll happen. I like this episode, but it is like a blatant ripoff of I-Borg.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah.
It's also like the whole I-Borg story, I think, is pretty much ripped out of Day of the Dead, where there's a zombie. It's a George Romero film. It's the third in his trilogy where it was an initial trilogy, and then they kept adding more films later down the road. But
we'll be exploring trilogies maybe next week, Cam.
Yes. And so in that film, they have a zombie named Bubba. And they're experimenting on Bubba throughout and then realizing that there's still human instinct inside of him. That, to me, is kind of what I-Borg is. And then also Drone.
Yeah.
And I think Drone is solid, but it's no I-Borg.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we're talking about the evolution of Borg, what do you think just the look of this drone here?
I think Voyager... despite the sins it creates and a storytelling point of view towards the Borg, I think visually they do a good job.
I really dig. You know, you can see like the literal evolution of what the species would look like with 29th century technology. And I like the idea of how dangerous this is. Like, this is a dangerous thing. I do you think Picard would make the same decision with this drone as he did with Hugh?
Depends what Geordi's saying.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think Geordi would be friends with this one?
Well, you know what? No. The question is, would B'Elanna be friends? Because she has made friends with robots in the past.
It's true. Prototype.
So, yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, it's quite true. Do you feel any of the emotion, though, in Drone? Like, I felt a lot of emotion in I-Borg, and I didn't really get that here.
I think...
There's an interesting philosophical... you know, conundrum to ponder in Drone, but I don't think it's an episode that really hits me, you know, on an emotional level.
No, this is a very effective high concept episode.
Mm-hmm.
And on that level, I dig it.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I didn't necessarily get tugged on the heartstrings so much. So maybe we just jump forward just a few episodes from now. This is where we really get to Voyager really like going to the Borg well quite a lot. But we have Dark Frontier parts 1 and 2. I believe this is in February sweeps as well. And this to me is where you really start to lose me with the Borg. We have the reintroduction of the Borg Queen, now played by Susanna Thompson, who I think does like a really stand-up job.
Yeah.
Those are big shoes to fill coming off of Alice Krieger's performance, and who's phenomenal in Star Trek First Contact.
And Susanna Thompson was up for the role for First Contact.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can see why, you know, and works. Mm-hmm. And of course, for those who don't recall her, she has been an actress in Star Trek before. I think most notably in Rejoined, she played Jadzia's former host's lover's host.
You get where I'm going.
Yeah. Jadzia's lover, essentially, in that one.
And that's a good episode.
Yeah, and I think this is where I kind of get frustrated with the Borg at this point, because essentially the Borg Queen has a newfound interest in Seven of Nine, and she's showing her...
Seven of Nine is basically the promised one at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
The prodigal daughter of the Borg.
To me, all the previous Borg episodes, at least I could... tell you what the basic storyline was, a high concept one, but this is just kind of I get bored watching this one here. It's just like a lot of like,
well, to me the central premise is pretty flimsy, that like Janeway's training the crew on how to like do a mission to steal technology from the Borg.
Yeah,
it's like okay,
she wants to get her crew home. Considering the dangers and then considering the possible return on investment here, I don't know, man.
We've come a long way from the days of like, holy crap, it's a Borg cube. What are we going to do? To, like, I got an idea. Let's go on to that Borg cube and steal technology.
Let's piss them off.
Yeah, like, well, what's going to happen?
This is them essentially saying, yeah, the Borg aren't scary anymore.
Yes.
Even though However, we do have, maybe the assimilation scene.
Which I think may be the most horrifying Borg moment or sequence in the history of the franchise.
I could definitely see the argument for that. Because it is, like, you go and watch this entire planet get assimilated, people trying to escape.
It's very, like, World War II Germany, Nazi concentration camp type thing.
Yeah.
The vibes given off are really unsettling and scary.
It is very unsettling.
Yeah, like, so. I genuinely think there's some brilliant filmmaking going on with portraying these assimilation chambers.
Yeah.
I don't think Dark Frontier is a bad two-parter. I think there's enough there to make it at least watchable, but I remember going into it being kind of excited for it because I really enjoyed the hell out of Scorpion.
Right.
And so I thought, well, hey, maybe, you know, I know that Voyager is known for their two-parters. Maybe this is going to be another big home run Borg story like Scorpion was. And,
yeah.
Really, you lose me with the idea that Seven of Nine is special. Because I think that is a fundamental misunderstanding.
Try telling that to Jerry Ryan's fans, Cam.
That just fundamentally misunderstands the Borg.
Yeah.
Like, Seven of Nine isn't special. None of them are special.
No. So, it's... Okay, Dark Frontier, some effective things in here, some redeemable sequences in here, but this is where the Borg... They start to lose me, really. Big time, here.
Let's get to the next one.
Oh dear. This one makes me sad though, because I believe Survival Instinct, one Ron Moore, this is one of his few writing credits involved with Star Trek Voyager.
Right.
And it's a very meh episode, is it not?
Yeah, this is where Seven encounters three people who are from her Unimatrix, and
it sounds like your dorm room back in university. Yeah, we share the Unimatrix together.
They were watching Bad Boys 2 a lot in there. Yeah, and they are still linked telepathically, but they want to be separated. And I don't know, man.
This is where the Borg... this officially is where it's no longer an event episode to feature the Borg.
Right.
And so here, I don't think we need to spend too much time on Survival Instinct.
Do you really... Like, how do you hold this episode up against Unity, the Chakotay one? To me, they're very similar.
I would rather watch this one than Unity, that's for sure. I do think there's more redeeming qualities here than in Unity.
I think there's a little... This episode really feels kind of stretched out. I don't think there's a lot of drama going through it. But I do think it has a really beautiful sort of ending with the idea that they're going to be separated and die shortly. Yeah. But they want to go live whatever time they have independently.
I have zero recollection of the ending of Unity. I don't think it was beautiful. Okay.
I did weep, though.
Well, so, Cam, we're going down a path here. The next prominent Borg episode is Collective, in which we're introduced to the Borg children. I know, you are weeping. So, of course, the very famous Icheb is introduced.
Very famous.
We also get, like, the Borg twin boys, the Borg girl.
Quickly written out of the show.
Yes, the Borg baby.
Yeah.
You know, if you were losing me with Dark Frontier, you've officially lost me now with the Borg children.
Yeah, they introduced Borg babies in Q-Who, and where the Riker stumbles across this chamber where they're, like, babies are in there with the implants and everything, and it's really scary.
Yes.
I
think it's because, like, the baby, you could tell, that's an actual baby.
Yes, yes.
You know.
When we get to this episode... It ain't scary and it ain't fun.
No.
It's really the introduction to characters that I don't think pay off in an interesting way. I think there's a real issue with wanting to tap into Seven's human side at this point, where they are now just using the Borg in service of developing Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
To the detriment of the entire species.
Yes. No, I think that's a very, very good observation, because that's essentially what we get from here on out with regards to Borg episodes.
Because there's a real motherhood thread throughout Voyager. You have, obviously, Janeway, sort of the mother of her crew. The Borg queen is the twisted mother of her group.
Yeah.
And then we try and give Seven of Nine also, like, a motherhood arc with the Borg children. And I don't think it works that well. I think there's an episode coming up. Well, I'm not going to say it's a very good episode. I think there's at least some value to it.
Are you talking about, why don't we just jump over to Child's Play, because that's the next episode in which...
That's actually, I don't think the one I'm thinking about. No, it's not, but that is another one worth talking about.
Well, Child's Play, it's where Icheb apparently discovers his real parents.
And they had really good sense, actually.
and Seven of Mine gets upset having to give back Icheb, but she's very, very guarded about the motives behind Icheb's so-called parents.
His parents are jerks.
Yes, they are.
Seven's parents were idiots. Icheb's are jerks.
Yeah, they essentially give him up, and it's...
They sacrifice him to the Borg, essentially.
And it's like, okay, great. I can tell why Icheb turned out to be the ball of charisma that he is right now. If those are your parents.
Do you think the show really explored the ramifications of this planet enough where parents are just offering their children up to the Borg?
No.
I never quite understood why the Borg would just take the children and not just take them all.
Yeah, I know. One thing that I think would be interesting if we ever explored the Borg in the future is an episode that thoroughly looks at a species that worships the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's something interesting there about like giving yourself over to the collective. Like, that's right. The afterlife to a certain way. Right. And I think there's potential to do it in this one, and it's completely... It's just not seized upon.
I think it would have been more interesting to have an episode tied into like a species that is maybe cybernetic or obsessed with technology, giving themselves upgrades. Like, I know it's referenced in an episode we're going to talk coming up, how like the Bynars implant themselves with technology when they're born. I think it would have been more interesting to have a species like that that strives for sort of perfection through cybernetics or something, looking at the Borg as maybe with a certain amount of hero worship. And maybe being sort of tempted towards that side. I think that could have made for a really interesting story. It's obviously not Child's Play, in which case it's just basically like farmers. Farmers, or colonists.
What's the worst farm episode? The Bajor, the TNG, the Deep Space Nine Bajor-based one, the TNG one, or this one?
I think this might be the best.
Okay.
Because I remember watching it, and when they kind of revealed it was an Icheb story, being like, oh no, oh no. But I will say, while I don't think they pull off the concept of this episode particularly well, I can't say I was ever bored. It was an interesting idea. I don't think it lives up to the horror of what this story should be. You know, when we had that Borg assimilation chamber in Dark Frontier, that is really unsettling, terrifying television. I think they should have maybe gone for a little more of that angle with this one.
Yeah.
Because doesn't it just end with like Icheb unconscious on like a shuttle and they're like shipping him out? It's like, whatever. Yeah,
but why don't we jump ahead over to Unimatrix Zero and watch... Cam, is this where the Borg, you're officially done with them at this point?
This is the nadir of the Borg.
It's for those who don't recall, Seven of Nine discovers like this kind of Borg virtual subconsciousness where Borg can be like individuals.
They can frolic and play.
Yeah, but honestly, this one, I remember... Going into season 6 finale, we knew that this season 7 would be the end.
Right.
And this is going to be the final season finale cliffhanger that we get. And they're like, oh, it's going to be a Borg episode.
Yeah.
And we get this, which is just such a non-episode. And this actually was not going to be a Borg episode. This is actually a pitch based on just some other species that had this kind of dream consciousness. And they end up turning into a Borg episode, and I wonder if it would have just been better to keep the Borg out of it altogether.
This also falls into the Vedic Borel trap.
gets to be a part of.
Where Seven of Nine is a fascinating character. And they
That is Vedic Borel to a T.
But they tie her to the like biggest limp dish rag of love interest.
I know. Like, did anybody even care at all about this dude?
Yeah, the character of Axum, played by Mark Deakins.
You obviously do.
He's brutal.
Yes.
Really brutal. Like, I am supposed to be invested in the story of this great love story that Seven of Nine had, you know, this last remnant of her humanity, and oh my lord.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy makes Borel look like just a fountain of charisma.
So in the terms of the evolution of the Borg, we are introduced to this idea of Unimatrix Zero, which is this subconscious individual land in which, I guess, a Borg resistance starts to foment here. Is this an evolution of the Borg, or is this a a sort of de-evolution here, Cam. A step back.
This is a step back. Yeah. What do you think of the idea, though, of a Borg uprising? Like, do you think this is a good idea, or do you think it would have been better to not go down that road?
I think if they could have tied it back to Hugh in some way,
right?
You know, I think that would have been interesting, but I don't know. The seeds were planted for some sort of Borg uprising, mm-hmm. and I think what they seize upon here, it really neutered the Borg even more so. And I just think it really takes away from whatever originally made the Borg interesting or unique.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting to look at Voyager in this regard because the parallels between the Borg and the Maquis. Because the Borg are sort of a twisted version of the Federation. And then we have Voyager, which is Starfleet and the Maquis. We don't get that philosophy going on. And we don't really feel a great sense of the difference between the Borg and these rebellion Borg.
Yeah.
Like, they never really mine either one for anything interesting. So you have these two parallels going on between these two, you know, these differing groups. And I just don't think Unimatrix Zero pays off. It pays off about as well as the Maquis do in the overall Voyager arc.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this two-parter, and I'm not going to say it was my least favorite two-parter, because there's another one that I remember thinking was brutal. That's coming down the road. But this was not good.
Can I take a guess which one that is, Cam?
Sure.
Maybe a spoiler for listeners. You're not a fan of The Killing Game.
No, I'm not.
Okay. I still have fond recollections of that one, but it's been a while since I watched it, so...
You like to watch Neelix shop for baguettes?
I like to watch Neelix sing on stage. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, that's 7 of 9. But I would have loved to have seen Neelix sing on stage. Anyways, sticking around with the Borg, evolution here, we both agree this is really a step backwards.
This is bad. This is bad. It's not even like... I don't mind if it's a misstep, if it's interesting. This is not interesting. It's not entertaining storytelling. I just think it's a really dull 90-minute episode.
So I think we're kind of wrapping up Voyager's evolution with the Borg here.
Here we have one, though, Imperfection, which I want to talk about, which is the one I was referencing earlier, that I thought actually the Icheb mother relationship with Seven is a little more interesting. The idea that Seven's implants are degrading and Icheb has to donate them to her. I actually like this episode.
See, I didn't really like this episode. I really hate episodes where, like, somebody in the crew's just really sick and, like, just falling apart.
You didn't like that one where Worf was crippled?
No.
What about the enemy, though, where Worf might have to be a donor?
Well, but that's not, like, a member of the crew.
True.
You know, well, because what it is, like, you're making the main characters more, like, passive entities. They have so little control over their own fates, essentially.
Right.
And that's why I don't really necessarily like this. These kinds of episodes. I agree, maybe this is more interesting than what we got with Child's Play.
I feel like this is probably Icheb's maybe shining episode.
Yeah.
It's the one where I'm not bored by him, where it feels like they give him a dramatic story to bite into. A lot of the time, Icheb just is, whew. I mean, he's just like cardboard on legs.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say this is an all-timer for Voyager, but I thought Imperfection is all right. Why don't we move into Endgame? Which wraps up the Voyager Borg arc, I guess.
Is this not the nadir of the Borg?
I'm going to say Unimatrix Zero is for me.
Is it? Okay.
I prefer Endgame to Unimatrix Zero.
Okay.
But...
Maybe I just have feelings about how this is wrapping up the Star Trek Voyager story.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the Borg are at this point effectively...
They're pushovers.
Yes, there's no argument about it. They have been neutered. It's not that they're in the process of getting neutered. They are neutered at this point.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the 8472 war that beat them up. We've got that Unimatrix Zero insurgency. Mm-hmm. Now we've got old Admiral Janeway destroying the transwarp hub, and that really cripples the Borg once and for all, essentially.
Yes, yeah, by infecting it with pathogens.
Sure.
I can't wait until we talk about this two-parter.
I can wait.
Because I think it's such... it's really aspiring for all good things.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
With all the time travel aspects.
Just swapping out the Q sort of story with the Borg.
Yeah.
And, I mean, again, getting back to the overall theme of, like, the motherhood angle, I like the idea of Janeway fighting with the Borg in the end, because it is kind of the two mothers battling for their people. Oh, boy, it's not paid off well, though. And it does make the Borg just look weak again.
Well, let's stick with the topic here. Evolution of the Borg. Is this essentially the end of the line for them, to you? If we're talking about their evolution as a species, as they're depicted in this franchise.
I have a very hard time, from this point forward, imagining the Borg as anything worth exploring ever again.
I agree. Because let's say after Discovery, we get another Star Trek series, and it takes place in the 25th century.
Yeah.
Let's say the Borg reappear. You either have, like, this really lame, weak species,
mm-hmm.
or they effectively wipe out whatever Admiral Janeway did with the pathogens, and
right.
you have this species that is resurgent again. And right. either way, I have no interest in revisiting that. To me, I'm done with the Borg at this point.
What do you make of the Borg Queen? Because, you know, in First Contact, they kill her.
Yeah.
She dies at the end, quite horribly. And then she pops up again in Voyager, and there's no reference made to, like, you thought you killed me before, or something like that, really.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going back to what you'd said earlier, the idea that the Borg Queen is just a manifestation of the hive mind, essentially.
I think this kind of helps validate that interpretation of mine, which I think is a minority interpretation, but
right.
I think it does validate that entire idea.
But then what about the end of this, where it's like, again, we're seeing the Borg Queen die? Does this mean another one's popping up in, like, 2 days?
Yeah, it does. Does? I think so.
But they play it as a big dramatic, like, this is the end of the Borg Queen.
It's not.
No, it's not?
No. I don't think so. I mean, unless those pathogens are, I don't know.
Yeah.
Look, if she's gone, then the entire Borg Collective is gone as well.
Right.
So.
So, what is the end game of the Borg at the end of this episode? Like, what is left of them?
Look, they can't really travel at transwarp. I guess all that's left to do, and they're severely crippled. I guess all that's left to do is search out some sort of species that could fix their technology woes.
Right.
I don't know, but I don't, like, can you believe this episode actually aired 15 years ago, Cam? It's been 15 years since we ended the Borg on Voyager.
That is pretty crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm all I can say is I'm very disappointed with how we left the Borg on Voyager.
Well, Tyler, that wasn't quite the end.
On Voyager it was.
On but, Voyager it
on
was.
Butt cam.
But Enterprise rolls around in season 2.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what's good for ratings?
Borg.
Yeah. And so we get the episode Regeneration.
Well, for those that don't remember, essentially, some scientists find some debris that was left over from Star Trek First Contact when the ship was destroyed by the Enterprise E in 2063.
Right.
And so it's arctically frozen.
It's very John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, which I dig. But, so we get a resurgent Borg sort of in time, in a way, trying to get back to the Delta Quadrant, essentially.
Yeah, and this was an episode I know you were not a fan of.
No, I'll ask you one question, Cam. Mm-hmm. What was the theme of this episode? What was this episode about?
Borg.
That's the theme.
That's the theme.
Borg. This episode was...
This is a ratings...
It was a ratings grab but sure. it wasn't trying to tell you anything about Jonathan Archer. Didn't have any philosophical things to ask.
It's a horror episode. And I think ultimately it's trying to just kind of echo back to the earlier days of the Borg as just sort of a scary threat. The episode for that. I
do, because this episode's about nothing. This episode has no... I like Star Trek because it makes you ask questions. What questions did this prompt? Even with Unimatrix Zero, that at least is about something.
Sure, and I think the reason that it's not able to answer those questions is because of the fact that the Enterprise crew never encounters the actual Borg. They encounter these sort of half-assimilated Tarkarians or Tarkalians or whatever. And they never actually encounter the actual, you know, Borg as we know them.
But then I wish they could have done a story where John Archer's like, I don't know what to do about a species that seems so inhuman and mm-hmm. unlike anything I've encountered. They don't do anything like that, though. It's just, to me, I thought it was lazy storytelling, and it wasn't what makes Star Trek good.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out and swing away that being an all-timer.
But you thought it was an effective
I think it's an effective suspense episode. Okay. You know, if you want to see the Enterprise crew battling, they're not quite Borg. They aren't full Borg. They're sort of half-assimilated Borg, essentially, on the ship. I think it's fairly entertaining. It's fairly well shot. And I think it has some exciting moments. Is it unnecessary? Yeah.
Yeah,
didn't need it. And I think, I'm not a big fan at all of the idea of, you know, when we see them in Q-Who, this is the first time the Starfleet is ever encountering the Borg. I'm not big about using time travel hijinks to bring them in earlier.
I think the idea behind this, that it's debris from First Contact.
I know.
That's interesting.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, but sure. I don't know. So this episode aired in what, 2003, 2004, I think?
About that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been like about 15 years since we've seen the Borg depicted at all in Star Trek. Is that weird to you?
It kind of is, considering how big they are.
Yeah.
But I think the problem with the Borg is that given the time period in which they enter the picture in the 24th century, there's not a great avenue to bring them back right now.
Well, yeah, let's just discuss that. Star Trek Discovery apparently takes place 2250?
Yeah.
And so...
Are we going to get regeneration too?
Good God, I hope so. So essentially, Starfleet has not ever officially encountered the Borg. So,
Right. Like
you said, that doesn't seem to be a good avenue to bring them back. But let's say there was. Would you at all be interested in bringing them back?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
The only way, and I'm not saying I want to see this in the new Trek, because it's the new Trek, the Kelvinverse, the timeline's different, so theoretically they could bring them in earlier and whatever, no biggie. I'm not saying I want to see them in the Kelvinverse, but I would at least be interested to see how that series would aesthetically tackle them.
Yeah.
Because they would do different things. You know, we've seen, we didn't like their take on the Klingons, but it's different.
Yeah.
And I would be curious to see how they would approach the Borg, purely from a design stance.
I hope they wear jewelry, much like the Klingons do in the Kelvinverse.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, it's not a species that I'm really... Do you think most fans really want to see them at this point?
I would say perhaps casual fans would be interested popping in. Because
casual fans didn't watch Voyager for the most part.
No. And so the hardcore fans, I think, after Endgame, how could anybody really be interested in what the Borg are up to at this point?
I feel like people would want to see Seven of Nine again. I would be totally down for that. But I can't say that there's anything about the Borg that are compelling to me. I just think they're too thoroughly explored. They've lost any sort of mystery and menace to them. So I don't know what is left to do with them.
Well, let me ask you this. What would you rather explore further, the Borg or the Klingons? Because you've come out and said that you figure the Klingons have already been explored to death. You'd rather explore new species.
What timeline are we talking?
We're talking the Prime Universe.
Okay, are we talking 24th, or are we talking like Star Trek Discovery? Because I would totally be down to see it Star Trek Discovery, because it's a different time period.
Borg or Klingons?
Klingon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm saying, yeah, I would like to see Klingon in that time period, but if you're asking me, like, would I really be excited to see Klingons in, like, another Kelvinverse movie? Not really.
Prime Universe, what would you rather explore? It's the year 2389.
Okay.
Would you rather explore the Klingons in some way, maybe a one-off episode, or would you rather explore the present-day Borg in a one-off episode?
I think the Klingons, and it's not because I'm such the world's biggest Klingon fan, it's because I just feel like there's mythology there to see evolved, whereas the Borg mythology to me, and especially in Voyager, is kind of make it up as you go.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, I don't know how much was planned with the Klingons, but it feels fairly layered and thought out. Whereas the Borg, it was like, we need another Borg episode. What do we got? Borg Children, sure. Unimatrix Zero, well, you know. And I just feel like it was so haphazardly put together that I'm not really interested in seeing them continue that train of thought.
Yeah, I don't think there's anywhere else to go with the Prime Universe Borg in the present timeline. Whereas the Klingons, I don't know, I'd be fascinated to see where they are, you know, 15 years after the Dominion War, where they've really been decimated. And
yeah.
I don't know, like, I think there's so many possibilities for, like, this kind of a very different sort of Klingon that's dominating, you know, maybe they're not a warrior species anymore, you know, maybe right. That has fallen by the wayside after the Dominion War because they see how much it really destroyed so much of them.
Is there also the issue that, I mean, the Klingons, Romulans, Andorians, what have you, are just more, there's more depth there?
I think so.
The Borg are fairly black or white, right? Like, yeah. It's like they're an unstoppable force and they're going to assimilate you.
But you can...
Like, there's not a lot of room for sort of political discussion with them. There's not a lot of evolution, even though, despite the name of this episode, there's not a lot of evolution to what the Borg's motives are.
The most you can hope for is a character like Seven of Nine.
Yes.
So.
And Icheb.
And of course, each other. Okay, so Cam, before we wrap up this episode, though, every year, ever since we started doing the podcast, you and I, we always talk about our experience at Vancouver's annual Fan Expo.
Of course.
Which is a big sci-fi slash horror slash anime gathering in the city. There's always lots of Star Trek people there, actors, and we often recap what goes on. We actually dedicate entire episodes to it.
Yeah, the last 2 years, I guess.
Yeah. Cam, are we doing an episode on Fan Expo this year?
We are not. We are not. This was an embarrassing year where the majority of the guests seemed to cancel.
Yes.
And the headliners, I suppose, were Kevin Smith, Christopher Lloyd.
Carrie Fisher.
Sure. Question mark.
Well,
yeah.
And we may explain what happened there.
Yes. Well, so we decided ultimately the lineup was so poor. We decided instead of going the typical 3 days we go and then do a recap episode, we were going to go Saturday and see Kevin Smith. And we found out they were charging $40 extra to see Kevin Smith on top of
the ticket.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we bought for Sunday to see Carrie Fisher again, who we went and covered on last year's Fan Expo podcast.
She was fantastic.
Yes, she was a great storyteller. I would have loved to see her again, but she canceled. And so we...
Well, no, the organizers say she, quote, postponed.
Do you think it just means for, like, postponed till 2017?
No, it means she canceled. They just don't want to use the word canceled.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's all it is. It's such bull.
But... Yeah. And so you and I basically paid $38 to go wander the vendor's room for 2 hours and leave.
Yeah, we went and saw The Arrival instead.
Yeah, it was good.
But yeah, look, if you're looking for a great sci-fi movie to watch, we had far more enjoyment watching The Arrival than we did wandering around the vendor's room at this sci-fi convention.
Yes, so if you're in Vancouver for Fan Expo, consider saving your money.
Yeah, I think the only real... who was it? So it was Neil McDonough was there.
Yep.
Who played Lieutenant Hawk in Star Trek First Contact.
It was a group panel he did for, I think, Arrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's many Star Trek First Contact questions that he would have been answering.
Probably not on that panel, yeah. No.
Other than that is Christopher Lloyd, who, of course, played Commander Kruge on Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Yep.
That was the extent of it. And those aren't, like, well, like... They're not actors that are associated, first and foremost, with Star Trek.
Right. And, I mean, they had announced Gillian Anderson. She canceled. Yeah. It was, like, so many cancellations.
Jason Priestley even canceled.
Good Lord.
I was bummed.
Yeah. Karen Gillan.
Yeah.
Canceled.
So, I don't know. It was... I don't know. I guess that this tradition had to end. At least we're recapping our experience in the vendor's room.
It's pretty embarrassing, though. You know, we every year go to the Star Trek Las Vegas con where they have, what, like 110 guests every year? How many would you say cancel every year? Maybe 4 or 5?
Yeah.
And so the Fan Expo had, what, 20 guests?
Yeah.
And like 6 canceled? 7?
It's kind of embarrassing.
Very embarrassing.
And I also wonder just how many people were actually 100% confirmed.
Right.
Yeah, I think organizers can certainly advertise for people that they've reached out to.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they actually show up, that's another question.
So
this whole industry seems really sketchy to me, this convention circuit industry.
Which is why we've got to get in on the crooked business and
Yes.
start milking our own money out of this.
I agree.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know what your favorite Borg episodes are. Like, did we make the wrong call on some of these, like Unimatrix Zero or Child's Play? Is there more value to them than we saw? And how do you feel about the evolution of the Borg? I would love to hear someone who actually feels that, you know, they like what happened with the Borg. They like the way that Voyager handled them. Because we obviously didn't feel that way, but I'm sure there's people out there that do.
And we will not ridicule you.
No, I would love to read it,
honestly. Yeah, because honestly, I think Cam and I, one of the reasons we like doing the show is because we often have opposing opinions, and we always like getting opposing opinions sent in to us as well. So
right.
Share your thoughts with the Borg.
Right, so Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We're going to explore another species.
Equally terrifying.
Yes, the Tribbles. Of course, we realize that... along with the 20th anniversary of Star Trek First Contact, a few short weeks ago is the 20th anniversary of Trials and Tribulations, which I think is just one of the best, you know, love letters to fans you could hope for. And I think why not explore the trilogy of Tribbles? We can go back and rewatch all three of the Tribble episodes, which includes the animated series episode More Tribbles, More Troubles.
Right, right. So, I'm looking forward to that one.
It should be fun.
Any chance to talk about the animated series?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll discuss whether it's canon or not.
Oh, God.
You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Virtual Unimatrix World Smith.
You can find me at Reporton. That's REPORTON. N as in nanoprobes in the Doctor's Hollow Emitter.
Yeah. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.